Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is actress Jennifer Riker, who many of our audience will remember from season 2 of Black Lightning. She was the, shall we say, delightfully evil Dr. Helga Jace. And hopefully we'll get to see more of her in season 3, but welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice to meet you, Summer.
I mean, so Dr. Jace was one of those love-to-hate characters because you could see that she was intelligent, she was skilled, and she wanted to achieve fame and immortality, and she didn't really care about things like ethics and rules and morality in order to get there.
Yeah, it's truly exciting for me to play that kind of character, but I think that the general rule for any actor is that we don't judge ourselves or the character. We don't say I am villainous or I am sociopathic. We just we believe that we're advancing science. That I sound like I have multiple personality. Doing the role, I have to come from a place of earnestness and triumph, and anybody in my way is doing just that. They're wasting time from my goal, and so it's almost like it's an altruistic thing. But yes, if somebody's, I can get impatient if somebody is ignorant or in my way, or they take me to jail again. So that's how I approach the work, the character.
What was for you, the most important part of her personality to bring out? Because there was just such a assuredness and just a purpose there that added to the believability of her really just like, you know, hey, this is my experiment. I'm running it my way. This way is going to work. Your way is wrong. And it was just refreshingly brutal in a way.
Yeah, I think the writers did a marvelous job. It was pitched to me as a, when I booked the role, as sort of a Hannibal Lecter. And, you know, that's exciting for me, first of all, because it's so against everything on my resume that I had ever played. And so it's a delicious role to sink my claws into. But I was careful. I didn't want to necessarily play a cutout cartoon, two-dimensional, just evil person. And I don't want to speak for Anthony Hopkins, but, you know, he also is a genius at what he does. And being thrown in jail and stopped from his work, albeit it's not for the good of society necessarily to be risking lives to do your work, but so I took that with a grain of salt and I said, okay, but how do I approach this without slapping on results, just mocking a character stereotype? Does that make sense?
Yeah, because there's a point where you have to remember that even though the outside audience sees what this character's behavior is as evil, that character's mind, they're the hero.
That's right. And you want to make it more than a two-dimensional character. You want to make this character somebody who's doing this for the advancement of science. And I'm one of the best at what I do. And so, you know, if you don't understand that, then I'm sorry for you, but you're going to have to step aside because we're wasting valuable time. And so you want to find the character's vulnerabilities and access that as much, and the fears, so that she is a full three-dimensional human, right? Not just a cardboard cutout, is all I'm trying to say.
So for you, what was some of the most fun to play, to enact in those scenes? Because the person you interacted most with was Lynn, and you kind of offended her sensibilities, but you saw her as an obstacle to what you thought needed to be done, or rather Helga did. And that tension was frustrating and just delightful to watch.
Thank you. I think you were saying what's most fun is, I as Jennifer, I don't tend to hold eye contact that intensely for the for that much of a sustained amount of time. So it's great being able to be that confident in what I'm saying, you know? And of course, I've never hauled off and hit anybody in my life. So just being able to just be fierce like that or take a punch, that's just not anything I have experience with. And who doesn't want to seem that intelligent? So I've like I said, I've had a tremendous amount of fun playing Helga.
Well, I don't want to get into too many spoilers just in case by now someone hasn't seen the finale, but do you hope or do you believe that we'll see Dr. Jace again in season 3?
I do. With the way that we left it, with her being sent for from the Markovian, I imagine there has to, you know, they wouldn't introduce a theme, I think, without seeing it through. You know, we dangled a carrot with Helga's son, who we haven't met yet. So I wonder if that's going to be addressed or introduced. And we know that the teleporter came and whisked her out of jail. So I'm hopeful that there'll be this left turn we're taking into the land of Markovia and see what that brings about. Because, I have aligned myself with Tobias Whale. Except he's in one jail and I'm now in a different almost country. So I don't know. I don't know how the writers are going to circle back or if they even will.
And it turns out that the reason he hasn't aged is because of something your character created.
The anti-aging serum, which I'm taking and he's taking. And yeah, I would imagine he needs it pretty desperately. And I'm not around. So I don't, like I said, the writers have much to invent.
And I'm just wondering what, because there's either going to be a side effect or there's going to be another discovery off the back of that serum. I see trouble ahead and it could be a lot of fun to watch. So I'm looking forward to that and hoping you show up sooner rather than later in season 3.
Thank you. I'm just hoping I stay alive.
Now, your other big thing is actually teaching acting. So where do you teach primarily?
Right now, I split my time between Atlanta filming the show and Tallahassee, Florida. I'm at Florida State University in the College of Motion Picture, and I'm teaching on-camera acting for the BFA students who are majoring in theater, which is the program I came out of in 90. I'm going to age myself, but I went here 93 to 96. In the same program, and there's still some of the same professors who trained me that actually hired me. So that was fun. I think that the delight for them is that I've, as they put it, I'm not putting words in their mouth, but gave some street cred to the program in that I'm still working. So I'm able to bring back the actual episodes and use them in class to teach my students. I can put the episode up on the wall and say, do you see here where I'm thinking one thing, but I'm not saying it in terms of subtext? And so the students are getting real, right from the horse's mouth kind of education. They didn't even have this program when I went here. There was no such thing as on-camera acting classes. I just had to cut my teeth on the first job I ever booked out of here in New York City. And, you know, I've lived in New York, I've lived in L.A., I've lived in Atlanta, and I've had some feast or famine years. And at this point, I was just looking for also a little more stability. Of course, as I get the stable job, I also book the show. So now I'm working double. But work is work, and I'm grateful for it. I feel very blessed to have it. And, I don't want to stop the train and get off. It's too much fun. But I, getting back to the teaching, it's incredibly rewarding, and I like it, and I feel like I'm good at it to articulate to the students. And I try to stay very transparent with them. I don't want to guide them to do any. I don't want to sugarcoat this profession. I'm sure that the school itself doesn't want me to talk negatively or discourage their dreams. But I do like to explain to them that if there's anything else that they're good at that they maybe should perhaps go do that, because this industry is unrelenting, unforgiving, and it's just it's not for the weak of heart. And I knew when I was a little girl that I was going to do it, but for those who are just now getting into it and dipping their feet in the pond in college now, you know, I think that I'm pretty brutally honest with the fact that everyone sitting in the classroom, maybe one of us will find work as a working actor. Everybody else is sort of, you know, it'll be a lot of rejection and very little actual work. So you have to love it. You have to really want it. And I think that's what sets me apart in my teaching, is that I believe in some tough love. That's the training I had. I went to the Yale School of Drama, got my master's in theater there. And that's sort of how I was reared, with some tough love.
So the classes you teach now, they're geared more towards television and film acting, or stage acting, or just, you know, split between both?
No, I'm specifically on-camera acting. So these are BFA theater kids, and they come to me for the actual on-camera experience.
Okay. Do they have, or did they have this year, an opportunity to, say, take a field trip to Atlanta and watch how you were, I guess, directed on set?
No, but actually, I do want to sort of have an alliance with one of the studios after they graduate, and maybe perhaps have them either take a tour or intern or something. We're still figuring that out. I'm still new here. I just started in the fall. But when I was on set doing one of the episodes, I needed to find a substitute teacher. The students actually Skyped in while I was on the set, and I was able to take the camera around and show them. And, you know, I think that was very exciting for them, and it's an opportunity for me to make it very palpable for them and introduce them to some of the people on set, and then take that back into the classroom and explain to them protocol and pecking order of what each position is responsible for on a set. So they're learning the business of show business as well as the actual nuts and bolts of camera acting. That's what I think sets our program apart from other university programs who don't even offer camera acting.
Yeah, I would think even like a one-day workshop where they get to observe, say a scene in a film being shot, or a half a day's worth of a TV series being shot, that just that little bit of exposure could go a long way into, you know, it's the difference between, you know, reading it in a book and actually doing it in the field. It helps certain pieces click together, and you go, oh, I get it now.
Right. Completely.
So what else do you like to tell your students about the real world of professional acting?
I spend half a semester on the business side of show business, and so I'm really trying to save them the blood, sweat, tears, and money that I had to figure out. And, you know, I tell them a lot of what not to do and what to focus on and what else is just noise. A lot of it is just based on relationships, and I try to make it clear to them that you have nothing if you don't know how to cultivate relationships. That's 99% of this whole industry is what it's predicated upon. And I bring in a lot of guest lectures for them, including my accountant for actors' taxes. So they're getting a real three-dimensional, you know, 360 view of this business, because I think that's sometimes lost on students who just see the glory of it. So I try to bring them a little bit back into feet on the ground reality, and show them with some of my guest lecturers and their experiences how you can have real highs and real lows. And, you know, I've watched many peers of mine drop out of the industry in pursuit of something more stable, or because they didn't want to have struggling actors' lifestyle anymore. Some of them sold out and did shows they normally wouldn't have craved doing after having a master's degree with a mountain of debt, but they did it just so that they could work. You know, the lean years were extremely hard. It's not for everyone, and you really have to have a thick skin. And I just want to make that completely clear to my students.
Do you see the expansion of platforms like Amazon Prime and Netflix and Hulu as being more opportunity for actors, or is it restricting them, in your opinion?
Oh, my gosh, it's much more. Also, you know, Atlanta, they're calling the Hollywood of the East, but, I mean, we have in Atlanta more work than anywhere in the world, and a lot of agents are becoming bi-coastal, and a lot of producers are en masse moving to Atlanta, because it's just, besides the tax incentives, there's so much work. And with Netflix and Amazon, so much more content can be created without having to go through too much red tape to get these things made. And so, you know, things will come out, maybe they don't last, but then there's just 10 more down the pike. So there's more than ever work now. And I always try to tell my students, don't rush. There's plenty of roles for everyone. Just be good at what you do. But content with cable and new media is tremendous. You know, there's the web series now and the podcasts and the even the cartoons and voiceovers. There's just so much work. There's it's a wonderful time, I believe. And I might not have thought that 10 years ago, but it really is.
Do you think that affects what actors can make? Because I know they're, you know, the same with writers in Hollywood. The jobs are not, you know, sustainable as a one project will get me through a year kind of thing anymore.
I think what I'm understanding you saying is that, but I can also be offered several jobs at once, and the agent and the actor can figure out with the production crew and company how we can fit several different jobs in a schedule, and they'll work around it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't have to just say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm out, I'm doing this one project. There's ways now that you can do a lot more than just booking out and saying I mean, don't get me wrong, I would love a 10-year run on a hit show like Cheers or Friends, you know, who had 10 plus seasons. But with shows getting canceled and pilot season having mid-season replacements, it still is bargaining power for your agent, and knowing that, you know, you went through screen tests, that you become a reliable actor. It's like you're vetted, and so you become more enticing for a director and a production company.
Yeah, because I thought at first I thought that the Netflix model of 10 episodes or 13 episodes per season would hurt. But then you realize, well, wait, no, they can do one in the spring, one in the summer, one in the fall. That's the same amount of episodes. So that might work out if they're going to be working like that. So it's
like Lightning has 16 episodes, which is different.
Yeah, it's sort of in the middle. It's like not 22, but it's more than 13. And
mm-hmm. And I think Netflix is fun for people because they can, you know, go to the buffet and eat all they want and binge if they want.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I love it too. I mean, I can just polish off one plate over the weekend and then come back for, you know, the next highly recommended show. And I think that's mostly what the difference is now, if viewers don't have to wait week after week. And that's exciting.
It is. It's fun a lot of the time. So what else are you working on? What else is on your plate besides teaching, and like what new projects are you working on?
Well, you know, in less than a month we'll start season 3 and of Black Lightning. I have a movie out right now, The Nancy Drew and the Hidden Staircase.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little comic relief part in, and a new film coming out in July I believe on the 12th, called Stuber with David Bautista and Camille from The Big Sick. I'm playing just, you know, like I said, some comic relief. But if you look at my resume, I don't have too much comedy on it, which is ironic because that's what I grew up, started out wanting was, you know, Gilda Radner was my idol and Carol Burnett, Lucille Ball. But it's funny. The industry dictated that I was more of the pantsuit wearing, thinking man's woman kind of roles and white collar. And I don't complain. I just go where the work is. But I do love, my first love is comedy. So anytime I get to play it, no matter what size of the role, it's a real treat.
Have you thought of doing any, like, comedy short films or web series, something that you write for yourself?
Well, that's a wonderful question. There was a time that I actually tried stand-up, which is scary. I did the improv group in Los Angeles, the Upright Citizens Brigade, and I thought about, I did form for a while there, my own production company, based on a dream, a recurring dream I had. And it was a cute little story that I tried. I sat down and had a writing partner, but it never took off. I would absolutely love to create my own content. I have many colleagues who are doing that right now and find it incredibly rewarding to have their own hand on the stick shift and be able to control how and when it's being made and you know, not being told where they have to make edits. I don't know what the future holds, but I wouldn't be opposed to creating my own content.
It sounds like you would be in a perfect position to take everything that you've learned since that last time, just from acting, from teaching, and even from trying to get that other project off the ground. It sounds like you could take a better shot this time.
Thanks, Summer. That's the motivation I needed. I appreciate that. Sometimes we all need a little kick in the pants, don't we?
I am here to inspire and motivate.
I appreciate it. My agent appreciates it too.
Awesome, awesome. Well, just so you know, just put like one little like science fiction episode over there, and we'll talk again. How's that?
Yes, perfect.
Sci-fi comedy is a underexplored subgenre.
Well,
just so
maybe,
you know,
maybe you need to help me write that then.
Keep my number. We'll talk.
I bet you're going to say, I'll keep my day job. Thank you very much.
No. We can work with this. I can multitask. Yes, I can. So where can people find you online to follow what you're working on next? Maybe the production of season 3 of Black Lightning or just if they're in school at Florida State, maybe they want to take your class.
Oh, that would be wonderful. There's several ways that you can always go online and find the faculty and staff over at the College of Motion Picture Arts in Florida State University. It is one of the best programs in the country for that. My personal website is www.jenniferreicher.com, and on Instagram, official Jennifer Reicher, at Actor Reicher on Facebook, and I haven't gotten into the wonderful world of tweeting. Those are the places I can be found.
Well, as someone who has participated, you should at least follow the hashtags of Black Lightning on Twitter when the episodes are airing, because the fans and the actors live tweet, and it's such fun.
Do you know what? I've taken a peek at the Facebook. We have one of the biggest, I was invited by a man named Lance, who runs the biggest Facebook Black Lightning fan page. And I did a peek once or twice during an actual airing of an episode to see what people were saying. And yeah, there are some super fans out there, for sure.
Passionate beyond measure. And
yes,
show.
Very loquacious fans.
Oh.
Have no problem saying what they mean.
And because the show is so much fun. And
yeah, it is.
It's so real. some of the reactions, some of the emotions, and it's got one of the best damn soundtracks I've ever heard.
Oh, that seems to be the consensus. Absolutely. I agree with you.
Well, hopefully we will see you joining in some of the live tweeting, live Facebooking during season 3. But Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Summer.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hi, I'm Aaron Ashmore from Sci-Fi's Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
So this is a milestone episode, number 900. Didn't even realize it until cleaning it up to be posted. And it's going out on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. That's crazy. Oh, but yeah, 900 shows is a lot. I've been around for all of them, haven't participated in all of them. No, actually I was, because for the years that I was not actually on the show, I was the producer wrangling the interviews and making sure the website kept updated. So I've been doing this a long time. I have the gray hairs to prove it. But we have many more shows to come. A few more interviews with talent creators of independent film projects, both science fiction and horror. Looking for some new details about movies and comics, we will have some San Diego Comic-Con reports coming in. So look forward to that. And let's see, what news was announced at Comic-Con? The Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 4 was announced. We have The Eternals. We have Blade. Mahershala Ali is going to be Blade. OMFG. Wow. That I did not see coming. They announced Captain Marvel 2 and Black Panther 2 and Doctor Strange 2. And Doctor Strange 2 is supposed to be horror. And I'm curious where they're going with that. But no details yet, because these movies aren't slated until 2021 and 2022. Oh yeah, the next Thor movie will be Lady Thor. Natalie Portman will be Lady Thor, following the storyline from the comics, I believe. And so we really are going to have Thor traveling with Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So it's going to be as Guardians of the Galaxy, playing Guardians of the Galaxy in Guardians of the Galaxy number 3. So much movie, so little time. they released a trailer for the Top Gun sequel. And apparently most fans enjoyed the scenes of the jets fighting. The nitpickers pointed out a few errors, like how the hell is Maverick still in the Navy when his past mandatory retirement 10 years ago or something like that. And it seemed like a lot of people said, you know, given his age and given the movies that he's done, we'd rather see a sequel to Days of Thunder because there are actual drivers on the circuit, on the NASCAR circuit now, who are in their 50s. And, you know, I cannot fault them because seeing cars going fast has worked wonders for Fast and Furious. So I don't know why somebody didn't look at that and go, hey, we can bring Days of Thunder back. You know, kind of makes sense. Given the popularity of the Fast and the Furious, how could you not make a Days of Thunder sequel? Makes more sense. Anyway, if you haven't seen the trailer for The Expanse Season 4, go find it right now. Season 4 will drop on Amazon Prime in December, so you have plenty of time to catch up. We also had the season premiere of the final season of Killjoys. I am both happy and sad. That's okay. We can handle it. We can deal with it. There were many tears at the thought of Killjoys ending, but at least Killjoys gets a decent final season, a full final season, a closing ending, unlike Firefly. Enough said. What news came out of San Diego Comic-Con that you had been looking forward to? Give us a call. 602-635-6976. Or send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. Put in your questions, put in your comments. Look for our upcoming contests. Very, very soon there should be a contest, a giveaway of a copy of Claudia Christian's Snack Hacks book. Keep an eye out for that. I will tweet that one out because people in the Babylon 5 world might not be paying attention to Slice of Sci-Fi, maybe, and they wouldn't know about it. And I'm sure her B5 fans would want a copy of this, to be completists and all. Trying to remember what other contests are coming up. I believe there will be a giveaway for a copy of Manifest Season 1, which will be coming out on Blu-ray this upcoming week. The season sets for Arrow, Supergirl, Flash, Supernatural, Season 14, aren't coming out till later in August or September, and I believe we're going to have giveaways for some of those. I know the Supernatural one, too, is going to be a giveaway. I believe Arrow and or Supergirl will be a giveaway as well. Like I said, keep an eye out on the Twitters and on the website. Or listen here to hear any updates on both open giveaways and secret listener giveaways, too. If you want to listen to Slice of Sci-Fi, you can check the show out through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and Player FM. And you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. If you're enjoying the show, please do so, because that helps raise the profile of the show. Let other people know that we're still here, we're still kicking, fighting to elbow our space in the podcast world. Now that everybody thinks podcasts have only been around for a year or two, again, almost 15 years. And you can help improve the show? What do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of? Let me know. That whole feedback thing. You can follow us on Twitter at Slice of Sci-Fi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, we have the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, leave comments on the interviews, leave comments on the reviews of the various movies and TV shows that we've done. Any graphic novel reviews, any comics author interviews, mostly, are going to be over at Writers After Dark, writersafterdark.com. And we'll be having some book giveaways over there, if books are more your thing. So check out both sites. I'd like to thank everyone who's helping support all the projects I have my audio fingers in. Your pledges through Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi, really do help keep the lights on around here. So thank you all for pledging. And everyone who is pledging is available, or eligible, sorry, for perks. And those perks are giveaways. Books, advanced reader's copies, DVDs, Blu-rays. At the beginning of each month, I pick a random supporter, random patron from the hat, and I contact them through Patreon saying, hey, you're eligible for a prize, here's what we've got. And 9 times out of 10, I don't hear back. So there'll be a better way to do these giveaways through Patreon. I really am trying to get you guys prizes because I have a lot of stuff around here that needs new homes just because I don't have the space for them anymore. I've either reviewed them or talked to the authors, and they need to go to good homes because these are very good books. I just don't have enough space to keep them all. I wish I did. Also, if you cannot support a monthly pledge through Patreon and just want to donate every now and then, we have a way for you to do that too. Head on over to paypal.me/scifisummer and throw a few bucks into the kitty every now and then and keep this crazy geek train going. Again, everyone who's donating, supporting, helping support these efforts here, all of your donations do keep the lights on around here. They keep the websites going. They keep the media hosting paid for. And I cannot thank you enough for everyone who is supporting. I'd like to also throw a shout out to my favorite geek rock band, Cy Fried, for crafting the theme music to the show. You guys really are near and dear to my heart. And if you are a fan of geek-flavored rock and roll, go check out their website, cy-fried.com. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.